Welcome back once again to the Parish of the Patriots, episode 353. We keep on rolling. We're already headed towards 400. The show goes on. I appreciate you stopping by and joining us this week. Of course, if you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway mark of the show. So just if it just triggers you to the point you ain't doing any of that, you can enjoy the first part of the show as much as you want. You'll be missing out, but that's not my concern. I do put it in its own section. So, yeah, let's see if you do get something out of the show and you feel like a little Christmas, throwing a little Christmas cheer my way. I got the snail mail address right here on the description page for this show, Radio Albion. Those crypto addresses are Sven's. Don't get confused by that. No, those are Sven, and that's fine if you want to contribute to Sven and to Radio Albion itself. I'm not discouraging you from doing that, but I won't see it. If you want to gift something to your humble host, you've got the mailing address. That's all I got. It works out fine for me. I just have that up there for y'all just in case you feel motivated to do so. And it gives us the opportunity to do the listener supporter mailbag. Good Christmas blessings, peace and joy there. Christmas card from Triangle Whip. Thank you very much, Triangle Whip. We'll see if we get Christmas cards for several months. For several months now. We kind of do that sometimes. We would get the Christmas cards going for a while. And I don't care. It's all good. All very welcome. And our second one here, GPD, a little something to keep the tax man at bay. I understand you're not a fan of the British royals, but I'd like to ask about the legitimacy of monarchs. Do they have a place in the modern world? If so, should it be limited to a ceremonial role, or should they have real powers? Also, how would they gain their position? By inheritance or some other means? All the best, Peter. That's really good. That's one of the reasons I enjoy listener supported mailbags. Sometimes it gives me an opportunity to have a subject here in the first part of the show. I usually have a few things jotted down that we can get into in the Christian specific segment. And a lot of times the first part of the show, I don't know. It's whatever. And it shows. But sometimes the listener supported mailbag brings us up something we might not have discussed otherwise. Yes, I absolutely believe in monarchies. But then you get into the problem you yourself have presented here, or the listener themselves have presented here, which is how would you set them up? The advantage we have here is, I think it's safe to say, you know, make no mistake, the democracy systems we live under now, and I just call them democracy systems because it's not actually democracy. If we had actual democracies, you would have an actual say-so. You know, your vote would actually count for something. We don't have that. They're just democracy in name. This isn't a democracy. You know, if you really believe in the democracy, we have the technology now. You think about they're flexing all of this technology to surveil things. You know, surveil people all the time, facial recognition, this and that, and watching everything using AI. To scour everything you ever post on the internet, including your private emails, to get a profile on you, figure out what you're doing. Imagine with the technology available, it would be a lot easier for them to just have it to where, okay, you have a handful of people and, you know, here's some bills that have been proposed and people literally vote on the bill instead of these quote-unquote representatives. That would be democracy. You know, the people vote. Well, we here in Washington, D.C. want to go to war with Venezuela. We're going to present our case about the narco terrorists. We get a new scare term every so often. Narco terrorists is the new one. Put it to the vote. Let's see how many people vote for it. I would prefer that. You know, and if you vote for it, then, you know, when it comes to votes, like, okay, well, to go to war with Venezuela is going to cost this much. So if you vote yes, then your, what do I want to say, your portion of that will be charged to you. The people who vote no don't have to pay for the war with Venezuela. So the more people, if a majority, you know, the more people vote for the war with Venezuela, the less they'll actually be paying because it'll be spread out among a wider group of people. But you actually pay for what you vote for. And you can do this to any topic. I want to have, I don't know, you know, somebody says, well, I want to vote that everybody gets a house. Well, that might sound really good, but when you sit there and look down, it's like, if I vote yes, the estimated cost that I'm going to have to pay for this is, whoa, how much? Maybe people can figure out how to get their own damn house. The point here being, that would be actual democracy, at least. We have this other thing. This, so that's why I call it these democracy systems that we have. You know, they just call it democracy. There's not really any democracy going on. Our democracy values of who we are. But anyway, we get the starting point of pretty much anything is going to be better than these systems we have. They're bad. And now it's just undeniably how bad they are. Do you dare oppose the democracy? Yes. Yes, I think this is an utterly corrupt system. I think it's really bad. You must be a communist. No, no. That's just the flip side of the same coin. Anything is going to be better. And you're never going to get a perfect system. You know, that's something else I see people, you know, when you try to come up with a new idea for government. You know, and you'll have naysayers. They'll be like, well, that wouldn't work because eventually, well, look, eventually all things are going to get corrupted because people are involved. This democracy system is, as it is today, is utter crap. You know, maybe it was workable 100 or so years ago, but today it is corrupted to the point it's failed. You know, I'm game for just about anything. Anything's going to be bound to be an improvement. Now, monarchies can take up any kind of form. And this is interesting. Monarchies can take up any kind of form, or I should say many forms. Is, for instance, is Xi Jinping in China, is he a monarch? Well, in a sense, he kind of is. But there is checks and balances on his power. But then again, if you look at ancient monarchs, there were checks and balances on their power as well. That was the nobility, the aristocracy. You know, the monarch couldn't just decree whatever random thing came to his mind, because if he got too out of line, the church also, in some monarchies, the church was, you know, his divine right to be king came from the church. Well, if he went out there and started pushing godlessness, he would lose the endorsement of the church and he would lose his authority. And of course, you get into the problem of how would you come to him? In ancient times, kings actually, you know, put their money where their mouth was and led their troops into battle. We have these pencil neck geek, paper pusher people who couldn't fight their way out of a paper sack calling the shots. They're always quick to go to war because it doesn't mean anything to them. They're not going to go fight it. They never have fought it. You know, in those days, in old days, the kings led their men into battle. And when they had proven themselves over and over and over to be a great warrior and great leader of men, they ascended to become a king. We don't really have that today. So you'd have to have some other way for them to get there. I think it's interesting that the promoters of the democracy system work so hard to demonize the idea of a monarchy or any form of authoritarianism. You know, they demonize it with just sometimes with just silly stuff, you know. Well, if you had a king, he can do whatever he wants to. The king could just show up and declare that you got to give him your wife to have sex with, and there's nothing you can do because he's the king. Like, why would he do that? You know, you're never supposed to ask yourself, why? Like, he's the king. He can literally, you know, the kings of old, they didn't bother with the peasants, really. I mean, why would they? Why stir up the peasants and cause yourself problems? They had their own intrigues at the palace and whatnot. No, he could just declare, you got to give me a wife. Like, why would he do that? I would be, it's just on a practical basis. Even if you had a complete heathen of a king, no offense to anybody, but I would be willing to bet he has access to women hotter than your wife. I mean, just. Anyway, the point here is they work to demonize it. Because in demonizing other forms of government, they hope you don't notice how bad what you have is. You know, how corrupt what you live under. Well, at least you don't have some king saying he's going to screw your wife tonight and you can't do anything about it. Gets into the realm of utter absurdity. And they're hoping that you don't see how actually absurd the current systems we live under are. Amazing things to me is the people long for monarchy. It's a natural form of government. You know, when the actual ancient Israelites said, we want a form of government like everybody else got, God gave them a king. You know, and so I think it's the most natural form of government. And you PC people want it. When we have the election, too, they go on about the democracy and all of that nonsense. But every 4 years when they have the presidential elections here in the U.S., the people have this mindset that they're voting for a king. I'm voting for whoever to be president because they're going to do, and there's this long list of things that if you actually believe in the democracy system, he doesn't have the authority to do. People bitch and moan about, oh, these people run, these politicians run for president, and then they get in there and they never do any of the things they say they're going to do. That's because they don't have the authority to do that. I thought you believed in the democracy. I want them to go in there and just unilaterally declare they're going to do this, that, or the other and just do it. Then you want a monarchy. You don't want a democracy. It's a natural yearning. People want somebody to be in charge so that, you know, they're hoping that person will make things better. And if things are getting worse, they know who to blame. The whole democracy systems, regardless of where it's at, they're specifically designed that no one person gets blamed. Who are you going to blame? The president blames the Senate. The Senate blames the president. Congress sits there and holds more hearings in front of TV cameras to pretend they're important so that the individual politicians can jockey for a better position and nothing gets done. The corruption widens. Everybody's standard of living continues to get worse. But hey, the king isn't trying to bang your old lady. At least you don't have that going on. You know, maybe you have people, you know, once in a while you'll see somebody and they'll throw out some just lunatic, you know, something like, you know, the Russians or the Chinese are going to invade America. They're getting ready. They're going to invade America. Then what are you going to do? Me personally, I'm going to welcome my new Chinese overlords because it's got to be better than this shit show. That's always my response. I welcome my new Chinese overlords. They're bound to be better than my current Jewish ones. Oh, wait. At least the Chinese you'll be allowed to say, you know, I'm having some fun. You know me. You got to laugh at this stuff. You can't be too serious. It'll drive you crazy. At least if the Chinese, what would that look like? The Chinese have invaded. We're going to use the Chinese. You could insert it. Because when I was a kid and the Cold War was going on, remember that movie Red Dawn and like Cuba invaded the U.S. or some shit? It was just so stupid. It was an entertaining enough movie, but you could put the Russians, it doesn't matter. It's just whoever the current boogeyman of the day is. The current boogeyman, especially among the Trump people is China because that's who they're told is the boogeyman. Maybe Venezuela will invade us with their narco-terrorist army. But, you know, what would that be like? What if why would it? First off, you have to ask, why would anybody want to invade and occupy this shithole? But setting that aside, what would that look like? Now we live Chinese regime. How different would that be? What sort of things would they impose? My gosh, how frightening would that be? Well, for one thing, if the Chinese took over and ruled over us, we would at least be able to say the Chinese rule over us. The Chinese, you know, we have a foreign occupied government. We could call it the Chog. the Chinese occupied government. We'd have the CHOG, and nobody would get, you wouldn't even get in trouble. Think about that. Like, you have the Chinese occupied government, and they rule over us. And, like, you know, you run into somebody, and somebody's like, man, who do you think runs our government? It'd be like, well, China. China occupies our government. They're the Chinese flag flying on the Capitol. There wouldn't be any risk of you're going to get in trouble. You can't say that. You can't say the Chinese rule over us. We have to pretend that that's not the case. It'd be a lot different than now. At least they'd be open about it, which would be making a lot more honest transaction. I'm not saying it'd be hunky-dory. I'm just kind of having a little humor at this. But how ridiculous it is when people are like, oh my gosh, what do you want? You want to be ruled over by the Chinaman? Maybe it might be better than our current foreign rulers. At least we could say it. People wouldn't be around. You can't say the Chinese rule over us. That's not allowed. That's anti-Chinaism. Sinophobia or something. To say who rules over us rules over us. They might impose their social credit score system on, like, we don't have that now. They forced China to sell their American holdings of their own social media, TikTok, so they could hand it over to the people who to run it, who totally are not in control of our government. We can't ignore, no. At least we don't have a social credit score. Just don't, as long as you don't step on any anti-Semitism or anything, we don't have a social credit score. Don't worry. See how good it is. We're not occupied by the evil Chinaman. And again, I laugh at this because they don't have any interest in doing that. I don't even understand what the reasoning, why you want to come occupy America. Why would they? What would they be getting for all of that money that it would cost, all of that effort? Occupy America. What are you getting in exchange from that? Exactly. A bunch of headaches? You know, it'd be like taking your life savings and going and investing and buying the absolute most rundown, crappy apartment building in the worst part of the city and saying, that's what I want to occupy. I'm going to move in there. Why the hell would you do that? Yeah, I love, too, when you have these people that act like monarchs while at the same time claiming they're not. Those of you in the European Union, what the hell are y'all doing over there? You basically have Ursula von der Leyen. She's acting like she's the queen. In fact, that's one of her nicknames, Queen Ursula. Didn't vote for her. How's that going? You know, you ruled over by the EU. How's that working out for you? I mean, you know, if you're going to get a monarch, at least don't get one like that. It's like the worst of both worlds, EU. It's like the worst of all worlds. You got Queen Ursula lining her pockets with Pfizer money, trying to get y'all into a direct war with Russia. They've been doing this big push now. Yeah, and they just changed the rules because that's our democracy values, of course. They just changed the rules to get the vote to go the way they want it to. They want to steal that Russian money to, quote unquote, secure another umpteen billion-dollar loan for the Ukraine. That's so crazy. You know, I mean, their justification for it is insane. You know, they need to desperately get their hands on this money to keep the Ukraine afloat a little longer. That'd be like if you had a relative and they were drowning in debt. You know, they bring in $2,000 a month and they got $5,000 a month going out in bills and expenditures and they're going under financially and they're broke. And you give them 1 month, you give them the money so that they can pay their bills. And then the next month rolls around and you're here again. So now you're down to, you know, you want to steal your parents' life savings to give it to your to your other family member to keep them afloat for another 2 months. But we, okay, well, even at that, what happens after that? No. They trying to steal that Russian money to keep Ukraine afloat for a little longer. Okay, well, then after you've done that, then what? I don't see any magical plan to where after Ukraine blows that money, stuffs it in their pockets, stuffs it back in the people that voted for this stuff, so their pockets, they get a portion of it. After all this money gets passed around and they try to keep the Ukraine afloat a little while longer, okay, well, then when it's gone, then what? There's no more Russian money to steal. What are you going to do then? There's no, and then we'll be able to part of the plan. It's just, well, let's do this right now and they can pay their bills this month. The EU is a curious thing. Nobody votes for these people. Nobody votes for Ursula. Well, except, you know, I mean, the people. Let me put it that way. The people don't vote for Ursula, and yet she's your queen. And your governments tell you have a democracy. Make that make sense. It's like if you took the worst elements of any system and combined them. I don't know. It's crazy. Of course, you know, when an organization builds their building to intentionally look like the Tower of Babel, that's a bad sign. I'm just saying, that's a bad sign. That should be a hint that they don't have your best interests in mind. Seems like all these democracy systems, when they go to their end stage, and again, that's a broad term because they apply it to the EU too, and there's nothing remotely democratic about that. But all these democracy systems, when they get in their end phase, they just resort to out and out just criminal behavior. You know, but here the U.S. is now. I'm sure y'all saw it. The U.S. is now just doing piracy on the high seas. We're not even disguising this anymore. It's bad enough when they were going around blowing up random speedboats. Because, you know, those speedboats are somehow going to cross the ocean and get to America with drugs to kill Americans, the narco-terrorists. Now they just seize an oil tanker. They just seized an oil tanker. This is literally the definition of piracy. What gives the U.S. authority to seize somebody else's oil tanker filled with somebody else's oil? If they have the authority, why do they have the authority to do this and Somalians don't? You remember when the Somali pirates were a thing? Like these ships would get a little too close to Somalia where they could get out there with their speedboats and the Somalis would get on the ship and take it over. And they were like, oh, we got to do something about the Somali pirates. If the Somalis said, well, those are narco-terrorists on that ship or whatever, Somalia could just say, well, we have sanctions on that cargo. And since they're sailing by, we're going to go ahead and seize it. That would seem ridiculous, and yet the U.S. is doing the same thing. I was talking about this with somebody the other day, and I said, you know, the big question they don't ask is who's getting that oil? There are like over 1 million barrels of oil on that one ship. Who's getting it? Because, I mean, the oil, I saw a deal this morning, and they asked Trump about that. You know, what are you all going to do with the oil? And Trump was like, we'll keep it, I guess. Who's we? Because that oil's going to get pumped off the ship, it's going to get sold, and someone's going to get the money. You would think there'd be at least a modicum of curiosity about where that money's going to go. How about an investigation? If we had a media, they could investigate that. If we had a free press instead of just various propaganda organs, imagine the breaking story. They investigated that oil was pumped off and where the money went. You're never going to see it. You know you're not. I know we're not. The fact that the media is not the least bit curious of, that's a lot of money. Who's getting it? Who we're going to keep it? Who's we? Because Dan ain't getting a check off the oil. Somebody is. They're literally just doing piracy now. This is where we're at. But it's okay. It's just, we can all see the decline. You know? And that there's just this widespread denial over it, you know? It's just something to see that there's this obvious state of decline. You know, for all my criticisms of this country, the U.S., I will tell you 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it was a whole lot better than this. Yes, things, we still had our problems. I don't have a silly, you know, Pollyanna view of the way things, you know, the good old days, the way things used to be. But it was sure as hell better than this. The decline is measurable. And it's there for everybody to see. Many, many people have a sense of it. And yet there remains this state of denial. You got people talking about we got to vote different or do something. We got to fix it. At what point do you say we've crossed the precipice? There's no fixing it. The state of decline is undeniable. And yet, by and large, people just continue to just look the other way. We just kind of shrug it off like it's going to somehow fix itself instead of dealing with that reality. We certainly don't see any dealing with potential reality from the politicians in Washington, D.C. We just see more of doubling down with the same. Trump put out his national security statement thing, and Sven and Dr. Johnson did a great Daily Nationalist show on it. I finally got the chance to listen to it over the weekend. And, you know, the denial is just laughable, you know. America with its premier, with its premier military, the best military on the face of the planet. And you wonder, do they actually believe this shit? Because Trump is a boomer. I mean, he may still be stuck in that mindset. He may really believe that, which is scarier than if he's just bluffing. If he's just bluffing, that's something you can work with. If he really believes that, that's something altogether. You know, you liable, you like, if you really, if you really believe, looking across the bar, you really believe that you go over there and whip that old boy's ass. And everyone, nobody else believes that. You know, the reality is you fixing to write a check that you can't cash, you're going to have problems. If that's not the reality. Made me think of that Bobby Bear song, The Winner. If you never heard it, go look it up on YouTube. Listen to it. It's a good song. I like it. See what you get for being the winner. America is the winner, buddy. We're always the winner. We're always the winner. Let's see what we've gotten for all this winning. System. These systems are in steep decline. And though on some level people are starting to recognize that, there doesn't seem to be any sort of sense of, you know, what are we going to do? Then what? You know, everybody just seems resigned to just let the cards fall where they may, and I guess we'll see what happens. And I guess, I mean, as regular people like you and I, that's all we can do. We don't have any authority in this. We don't have any say in any of that. And what do you call a system where the people have no say in matters of governance? Apparently, in today's world, we call that our democracy. Let's go ahead and get into the Christian specific segment. I don't want to get long. I'm trying to get better at my time discipline here with the show to make things fit now that Sven is back and we actually have like a radio stream and, you know, shows are actually supposed to fit in their allotted time slots. I'm trying to do better. Got pretty sloppy while he was away because it was basically just Matt's stuff and my own. So, you know, I'd tell Matt at the time, it's like, it don't matter how long you go. It's just our shows anyway. So it doesn't matter. Go as long as you want. And I did the same thing. So now I'm having to try to regather up that discipline to keep these shows more or less at an hour where they're supposed to be. So we got to get off into the Christian. This is the best part of the show anyway. We got to get off into the Christian specific segment. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now today we're going to do something I don't normally do. And I want to read, try my best to get through the entirety of chapter 6, an entire chapter, chapter 6 of the book of Romans. because there's really a lot of good stuff here. I mean, normally y'all know I just try to read a few verses and we kind of have a discussion, because I know it's hard, you know, to follow along with a lot of reading. It puts people to sleep. We're going to stop through here, so it's going to take a little bit to get through it. So we're not just going to be me droning through the whole thing. We're going to stop and talk about some things. I want to possibly get into some other stuff at the, you know, after this. I don't know if we'll get to that or not. And we'll just proceed and see how it goes. I don't know how it's going to go. It's as usual, the show is very unscripted, so I don't even know how this is going to go, how far we're going to get with it. But again, bear with me. We're going to go through the entirety of chapter 6, because Paul gets into a lot of the questions that we talk about here on this show, the role of faith and being saved, and even the role of sin in our lives and battling. You know, he speaks about earlier, we're not going to read it today, but he speaks in earlier verses that, you know, people were already claiming that the gospel that was being preached was essentially one of, you can just go on and wallow in sin and it's all good. And he was combating that and saying, no, we're saved by the grace of Christ. Now, I'm not going to try to rebeat that dead horse here. I know y'all are probably tired of hearing me talk about it. But of course, we're not saved by our deeds. We are saved by faith in Jesus. I don't ever want anything to be misinterpreted. What our deeds are, what our actions are, is a reflection of that faith, of seeing that progress. But we're not saved because we're always going, as long as we're in this flesh, we're always going to be developing. Let's jump right in here. And like I say, we'll kind of go through some different points. So starting off here with chapter 6, Paul writes, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? So if we're saved by grace, we're actually we're glorified, even though we come to the Lord in sin. This very first verse, as you see, I didn't get very far. When you progress in your faith over your life, because it is a lifetime project. If you come to be a believer, or I assume most of y'all listening are believers, but if you're, you know, it depends on where you're at. Like if you came to Jesus and accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior last week, let me tell you, it is a lifetime commitment. Don't be looking for instant results. And that's something that's very off-putting. I think it's one of the reasons MCC, you know, really tries to peddle this Jesus light thing that they do. It is a lifelong commitment. You know, we have a instant gratification society, and you're not going to get that. You're not. It is a lifetime commitment. I've said this before. One of the things about this faith is we struggle to attain something, knowing that as long as we're in this flesh, we're in this world, we're not actually going to see it. And we do it anyway. In our faith that when we leave this world and go into eternity, go into the kingdom of God, then we will see these things. But we see that. Now, as we look back, the longer you've been in the faith, what I was trying to say here, the longer you've been in the faith, you can stop and look back and see how you have progressed. And it's not just about, oh, I don't sin as much. Sure, that's part of it, but it is how much you gained knowledge in the Lord. You know, how much your faith and spirit have matured. You know, I mean, it's okay that if you look back on your faith and say 20 years ago, you were really wrong about things that you were sure you were right about when it came, you know, to your belief. So that you can look back and say, wow, I was sure wrong about that. I can look back, you know, say 20, 30 years ago. And I was fairly confident back then in my belief. But there was a number of different things I can look back on now. And it's like, I didn't have a clue. I did not. I thought I did. If you asked me back then, I could confidently tell you this, that, or the other. And today I would tell you that is absolutely incorrect. This also highlights the need to always be prepared to re-examine. We're always re-examining ourselves and seeking the truth. Now, This is a very roundabout way to get to the point. I know y'all are, I thank y'all for, thank y'all for your patience. As you look back and you see where you're at now in your faith and the different things that brought you to be where you're at in your spiritual maturity, you will inevitably find that sin itself played a role in that. You know, mistakes you made, sins you committed, even though they're sins, without those there, you would not reach the level of spiritual maturity that you're at now. You will inevitably find that. Remember, God sees the big picture. And yes, even your sin fits into the big picture that eventually you will be where you need to be in your understanding and knowledge of the Lord. And sin plays a role in that. So, again, we start back off, and I'll try to get a little further this time. What should we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein? Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Therefore, we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. For if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we shall be also in the likeness of his resurrection. Knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. For he that is dead is freed from sin. Now, if we be dead with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him. Knowing that Christ, being raised from the dead, dieth no more, death hath no more dominion over him. For in that he died unto sin once, but in that he liveth unto God. Likewise reckon ye also yourselves to be dead indeed unto sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, but ye should obey it, let me just start that verse over. Let not sin therefore reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lusts thereof. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. Let's stop there for a minute. I want to back up and relook at verse 8. Now, if we be dead with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him. And this points to these stages. You accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. This begins the journey. I was thinking about this the other day, and how we can look at it. I'm always looking for new ways to look at and approach these things. I'm a little hesitant to get into it because it runs into, there's conflicting views from different religious doctrines on this. But Jesus, as you know, died on the cross, 3 days later, raised from the dead. So you have the resurrection. Then he appears before the believers. He winds up going on then and ascending to the kingdom of God. Now, there is a belief that, you know, what was he doing during that 3 days? You know, where was he going? Some people, you know, it's been said he walked through hell. I don't believe that's necessarily correct, because you get into actually not hell, but Hades, which is something, you know, different. You know, that he went through Hades and spoke to the imprisoned souls there. But I'm not looking to get off into that discussion, because honestly, it's going to get into stuff I'm ignorant about. You know, I don't know about all that. And again, I know the Orthodox view of these things is one thing. And again, I don't know. But for the purpose of our discussion, think about the 3 days, whether you think he walked through Hades or whatever. That is essentially, you have these 3 points. The crucifixion, you know, the death of Jesus' body, his physical earthly body. Then you have this other at the end where he's, you know, rises from the dead. They go to the tomb. The stone is rolled away. He is risen. Then you have the 3 days in between where he was doing something, walking through Hades, perhaps. For us, it's... there is always this reflection also in us. And this is why I wanted to do this whole chapter, because here Paul is likening the same thing for us. If we die, you know, if Christ died for sins, we die to sin with Christ. We believe, as he says here, that we will be resurrected. We will have life in Christ. But what about the in-between part? What about the 3 days? Well, I think one of the ways we can look at this is when you come to Jesus and accept him as your Lord and Savior and start this journey, that's your crucifixion. You die, you know, sins are dead to you. You were crucified, so as to speak, with Christ. We look forward at the end of this journey to being resurrected to life with Christ, which would mean that right now, we're in the 3 days. Your entire life, from the time you accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, that is your crucifixion. That is your spiritual crucifixion. You have joined him with him, so as to speak, on the cross. We look forward to the day when we are resurrected with Christ, when we see the day of the Lord. So that would mean, if we continue with this comparison, that what we're doing here in this world is we are walking through Hades. We are, or hell, or however you want to translate it, but we're making the walk. We are walking through. This is our walk. This is our 3 days in between. This is your personal walk through hell, as it were. As you struggle, trying to attain something that as long as you're here, you're not going to attain it. Jesus went through the 3 days. He ascends to heaven. We have to go through the 3 days ourselves to attain that last part. This is the labor that we have undertaken. As we continue, Paul, as we've read here, says, we no longer give ourselves over to have sins and the lust thereof have dominion over us. That doesn't mean it's not going to go away. That doesn't mean it's going to just instantly go away, that it doesn't have dominion over us. In other words, you're working on it. You're struggling with it. You're trying to overcome it, and you're trying to gain knowledge and wisdom in the Lord. And as you gain knowledge and wisdom of the Lord, those things will continue to, the things of sin, the things of the flesh, they shall fall away. I think one of the mistakes believers make when it comes to this is this idea that they're, you know, that it's all about struggling against sin as defined as, I'm not going to do that anymore. If you're having a hard time progressing in your faith, I really believe this. If you're having a hard time progressing in your faith and you don't really see yourself making any progress, you know, like if I would be willing to bet that your approach to it is all focused on the sin. You're measuring your progress against, you know, how you're doing on not sinning. But that's the wrong approach. Hear me out. I do. I believe that's the wrong approach, because what are you making the center here? Sin? If sin is your focus, even in the context of not doing it, it still is having a certain amount of dominion over you. It is the focus, the center point of your life, even though maybe it has shifted from something you desire to do or something you struggle with. It's still to, you know, something you're trying not to do. But if you measure yourself against not sinning, then it still has this central focal point. Does that make sense? The Lord should be our central focal point. And the more you focus on him and learning about him and understanding him and getting to know him, those are going to, the sin stuff is going to fall away. You will find that instead of this constant struggle of, I'm not going to sin like that, you know, Just as an example, if you are prone to fits of rage, you know, to flying off the handle, and you're trying to, and that's still your focus, and that's how you measure how well you're doing as a believer. Every time the things that trigger you to fly off the handle into a fit of rage come about, you're sitting there just grinding your teeth, saying, I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to be, but you're already mad. You're not verbalizing it, but you're grinding your teeth. You are in the fit of rage. You're just basing it on whether or not you start cussing and slinging and slinging stuff around and acting a complete fool in front of everybody. You're grinding your teeth going, I'm not going to fly into a fit of rage. You're already in the fit of rage. And eventually, of course, you will throw stuff around and fly off the handle. And you will inevitably wind up in this position where you feel like you're just beating your head against the wall. Because you're focusing on what? Not doing that. And even if you don't do it this time, does that mean you're not going to do it tomorrow? And if you do it tomorrow, does that mean the time you didn't this time doesn't count? Even though in reality, as I said, sticking with this example, you really already did. You just grit your teeth and didn't verbalize it. But that's somehow a win. If you shift your focus to Christ, if you shift your focus to the Lord and focus on Him and just learning and knowing and understanding Him, eventually, it isn't going to happen overnight, but eventually you won't be gritting your teeth. You might have those triggers that would set you off, flying off the handle into a fit of rage. But the day will come when you recognize that trigger and you're like, wait a minute, what's that even going to do? So instead of gritting your teeth and going, I'm not going to get mad, you just start chuckling to yourself like, oh my gosh, you know, this is stupid, but let's keep on moving. You realize the pointlessness of it all. And it just simply starts falling away like a snake shedding its skin, like you lose dead skin cells all the time. So you just start falling off because you're not focusing on that. You're focusing on what you're supposed to do, on learning about the Lord, and those things become less. And you'll find success. As long as sin is the focus, then it's going to have power. It's going to seem more powerful than it is because that's your focus. Instead, we focus on the Lord. And see, this is a part of this miracle that the Lord has brought us, this grace through Jesus Christ, is that with confidence we can focus on Him and not give those sins power over us. Now, let's go ahead and get back. I went off rambling like that. I don't even remember where I stopped. Let's see here. I believe we're going to pick up at verse 14. We're going to roll with that. For sin shall not have dominion over you, for ye are not under the law, but under grace. What then? Shall we sin? Because we are not under the law, but under grace. God forbid. See, he plants. When I hit this verse, because Romans is my current New Testament reading, I'm in Ecclesiastes in the Old Testament, for anybody that cares. When I hit this verse here, I thought, this must be one of those verses that a lot of these churches, just like many others, they just don't read that part anymore. You know, they just skip it because it doesn't fit in. It doesn't fit into their narrative. It's worth rereading again. What then? Shall we sin because we're not under the law, but under grace? God forbid. I mean, could it be any clearer than that? You know, this is not a green light to just wallow in filth. This is not a green light to just keep on sinning and don't worry about it. Paul, I mean, and as crazy it is, a lot of churches basically preach this very thing. This must be a verse, one of those verses they skip. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death, or of obedience unto righteousness. But God be thanked that ye were the servants of sin. Ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered you. Being then made free from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness. I speak after the manner of men because of the infirmity of your flesh. For as ye have yielded your members servants to uncleanliness and to iniquity unto iniquity, even so now yield your members servants to righteousness unto holiness. For when ye were servants of sin, ye were free from righteousness. What fruit had ye then in those things whereof ye are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. But now, being made free from sin and become servants to God, ye have your fruit unto holiness and the end everlasting life. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life through Jesus Christ our Lord. And that finishes up chapter 6. The wages of sin is death. I was speaking with somebody recently, and they were observing the world around us. They made the comment to me along the lines of how amazed they are at how unhappy so many people are. You know, and they keep chasing after these things, social media, and trying to be, you know, like some kind of celebrity or, you know, just whatever the latest fads are. And just, they do all of these things. They pursue all of these things. And at the end of it, they're never happy. And this is an accurate, I believe, observation of the world around us, of the people around us in our society. So many people are just so unhappy. And the wages of sin is death, unhappiness. This is because when you buy into the lie, Satan's a murderer and a liar. Jesus told us this very clearly. And the lie is you're going to find happiness if you turn away from God and go chasing after whatever worldly thing. I mean, there's several different ones. There's a lot of different ones, I guess you could say. And they convince people that in these things they will find happiness. And they don't. And they keep beating their heads against the wall. If I do this harder, I'm going to be happy. Part of that lie, the devil is telling people, if you have to submit to God, you have to do what he says. You're just going to be a slave to God. No. Do your own thing. And people do that. But they don't find happiness. And that can be a part of the experience too, but what the problem is people will keep doubling down and keep trying that. You would think at some point somebody would stop, look around at their lives and go, okay, I've been doing this for a while. And you know what? I'm miserable. I know that the devil essentially told me that if I just go off and do whatever the hell I want, I'm going to find happiness. That hasn't worked. Let's try this submitting to God thing. Let's try this turning towards the Lord and seeing what that's about. Maybe it won't be so bad after all, but see, man is prideful. That entails admitting that you're wrong. You know, you would think with people who look around and say, I'm really unhappy. I'm miserable in my life. They told me this would make me happy. I was told my whole life this would make me happy. It hadn't made me happy. Maybe I should try something else. And it can seem, I can see where for somebody who's uninitiated in this, it seems counterintuitive. You submit yourself to God, you turn to the Lord, and that brings you happiness versus going off and doing whatever you want to. I think one of these key telling points is, you know, in the Lord's Prayer, Jesus put the part in there of, Lord, thy will be done. Your will be done, O God. Your will be done. Now, it is said that the devil says, do what thou wilt. You see how oppositional that is. Do what thou wilt. I think you can take that, those two things, and there is just a really good example of the conflict, of the opposing doctrine. Jesus says, Lord, thy will be done. And that means that's supposed to be our attitude, submission to God. Your will be done, Lord. But the devil says, do what thou will. If you want to do it, that makes it right. And that's really kind of what it all comes down to. And do what you want. Just do whatever you want. That instinctively sounds really good to people. Yeah, you mean I'm free to do whatever the hell I want? Yes. Just, if it feels good, do it. And many people have. And as many people have found themselves absolutely unfulfilled, their lives are a complete train wreck, they're miserable, many have to medicate themselves just to get through the day, and it never, for so many people, it never dawns on them, you know, this isn't working, why not try something different? Now, I kind of started to step off into something which is a separate subject, you know, thou will be done versus do what thou will. And this leads then to how the vanity of morality apart from the Lord, you know, if you're doing what thou will, then anything is moral. Anything. There's nothing. If that is, you have two choices here, submit to the Lord or do what you want. But you can't do what you want and then say, well, other people can't do whatever they want just because you find what they're doing repulsive. Morality outside of authority is empty. In other words, morality has to come from an authoritative source. Otherwise, it's just your opinion. And I realize I'm getting off into something else, but I touched on it, and I don't want to leave that just hanging out there. Morality has to come from authority. Otherwise, it's just your opinion. In other words, if the people are living under the doctrine of do what thou will, then you have no authority to, if you sit there and see somebody else doing something that you find morally repugnant and you point that out, that person's a degenerate, that person is doing something horrible. And they may be doing something horrible, don't get me wrong, I'm certainly not defending it. But you can't live your life doing what thou will, and then when somebody else is doing the same thing and you sit there and try to moralize about it. Oh, you can't be just going around doing that. My gosh, it'll destroy society. Yeah, no shit. So is what you're doing. You can't just, that's just immoral. The moral standard has to come from an authority. And the ultimate authority, of course, is God. And if the moral authority comes from God, then you have to say, Lord, thou will be done, because you are the moral authority, O God, not man. If you're going to do whatever you want because that's what you want to do, then you have to accept that that's what everybody else is free to do too, no matter how repugnant their actions, no matter how disgusting you find their deeds and the way they live. Because what gives you the moral authority? Who made you God? You know, how are you going to impose your morality on somebody else? Morality has to come from a sense of authority. To really boil it down to something very, very basic to make this point clear. I could go out here in my neighborhood and make up posters or flyers and stick it in everybody's mailbox in my neighborhood, declaring that everybody in my neighborhood owes me a tax. You're going to live in my neighborhood. You need to pay me 10% tax on your income or whatever. Nobody's going to pay me the tax. They're going to be like, who the hell is this lunatic? Rightfully so. But when the government taxes them, they go down there obediently. We all do go down there and obediently write the check to pay our tax. What's the difference? Because the government has authority. It is backed up with power. In this case, the very base power of violence. They'll send somebody to kick you out of your house or throw you in jail, bring violence upon you. But from that standpoint, you submit to the government saying you have to pay a tax because the government in this regard does have authority over you. They have the power to enforce it. Myself or Joe Blow down the street sticking flyers in people's mailbox saying, you just go ahead and put money in my box. That's your tax to pay me. You don't have any authority. People are just going to laugh at you. This is morality without authority. In other words, what I guess I'm trying to say, and maybe I'm not doing it that well, you can't be under the doctrine of the devil. Do what thou wilt. Just do whatever in your life, and then moralize anybody else, no matter how reprehensible what they're doing, because they're just doing the same thing you are. It's just maybe more extreme. It's just that you don't like what they're doing. You're trying to be the authority, but like the person trying to impose a tax on their neighbors, but you just look at you, well, who the hell are you? Who the hell are you to say that's wrong? Anyway, I didn't even intend to get off into that today. But like I said, I wound up touching on it. And so I want to just go ahead and kind of get that out there. You were going through the 3 days. I look at this life as going through the 3 days in the tomb. You know, regardless of what you believe Jesus was doing in that 3 days, we are in the 3 days in the tomb. We are walking in the 3 days in the tomb. This is our life. We're going through this struggle. You know, I believe that this process we go through, I've said this before, I believe this process we go through of reexamining ourselves and coming to know the Lord, this is a form of judgment. We're just getting it out of the way now while we have the time to do it, which is going to be a whole lot better deal than just ignoring it and then being plunged into that situation all at once after this life is over. So anyway, we'll wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the show. Hope you enjoyed the show. Appreciate you stopping by. Especially, of course, always hope you got something out of the Christian specific segment. That's my whole reason for doing this show. I ain't gonna lie. The first part's fun and all. I don't mind. I enjoy the discussion. But the Christian specific segment is my reason for doing it. So I especially hope you got something out of that. And again, I appreciate y'all stopping by. And I hope I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.